So this is going to be PowerPoint day. So anyway, what we're going to be looking at here, where this is Pentecost weekend, so it's appropriate that we would talk about something that has to do with Pentecost and the holy days. And what we're going to look at here is what took place between the Exodus and the first Pentecost. What took place with Israel on between the Exodus and the first Pentecost. Now, we have traditionally said that the law was given at Mount Sinai on Pentecost. And so as you look at the scriptures, is there any validity to that? Is there any support for that? And what we're going to do in this sermon is seek to give you some support for that particular premise. And so it's and Israel did keep the Feast of Pentecost, and they did, I think you'll see as we go through this, that there's some support for them keep being there on the day of Pentecost when God gave them the law. Because as you think about the law and the Holy Spirit, you cannot understand the law in the Spirit unless you have God's Spirit. And so there's a correlation there between the two. And so it's a, and it's also will also be a reminder of how important the Feast of Pentecost is to God. So there's going to be a chart available after we finish. So once we're done, we'll make the chart available to anybody who would like a copy. And it's a full color chart, and it goes through the whole thing from the start here to the Feast of Pentecost. Now, all of this unfolds in about the year 1440. The reason we know that it was about that year is because it says that in the fourth year of Solomon, it was 400 and some years beyond the time when earlier that Israel had come out of Egypt. So you can go back with that timing and determine about what time it was. So it was about 1440 B.C., and Passover begins on the 14th of Abib, and that's when the Passover was sacrificed at the beginning of the 14th. And then on the daylight portion of the 14th, Israel gathered, and they began to come out of Egypt. And that was on the first day of unleavened bread that they began to come out of Egypt. And it's important to understand the week at this particular time, the way it unfolds. The Passover was on a Wednesday. It began the evening of before on what we would call the beginning of according to God's holy day in the nighttime portion, and then the daylight portion would be the 14th, but still the day. And then Israel began coming out of Egypt at night, and we'll discuss that. Then, as you see here, you see the blue lines. When you see a blue line, that represents the Sabbath. Okay, the blue line represents the Sabbath, and the red line here represents, well, as we'll see, it represents the wave sheaf, and that is a Sunday, and then the seven there represents the first Sabbath after they've left the land of Egypt. They've moved beyond; they're moving beyond it, and they pass through the Red Sea, and they're continuing their journey. And we find the way that the week unfolded here in 1440 B.C. is exactly the same as what took place when Christ died in 31 A.D. The Passover was on a Wednesday. Thursday night is when Israel came out of Egypt, and Thursday night began the first day of unleavened bread in Christ's time. And then you have Friday, and then the Sabbath, and then you have Sunday, which would have been the timing of the wave sheet. So the weeks line up exactly back in ancient Israel's time and in the time of Jesus Christ. And it's important to understand that Israel began their journey on a Thursday. Because as we get to the time at Mount Sinai, we're going to find that they arrived at the very same day, on the same day. And that same day was a Thursday. and they had 3 days in which they were to prepare for God's giving of the law on the day of Pentecost. So we'll look at some of the details here about what took place here. We'll be looking at some of the things as far as the past and what took place around Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, and they're going through the waters of the Red Sea, and then we'll move beyond that. So, in Exodus chapter 12, verses 29 through 31, it says, "And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive, who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock." So as God had said, he brought the last plague upon the people of Egypt, and their firstborn died that night, and at that point, the Pharaoh said, "Go ahead and get out of Egypt. I don't want to see you again." So Israel began their journey. So they began their journey at night. And as they gathered on the daylight portion of the Passover, they had gathered at a place called Ramses. And they began their journey that night. And as they began their journey, it says, "So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses," that's where they gathered, at Ramses, "they journeyed to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children." So what this tells us is there were about 600,000 men, and in fact, there were actually closer to 630,000, because the Levites were not included in that number. It tells us that the Levites were about 30,000 in number, so it would have been about 630,000 men. And if you multiply that basically by four, you're looking at 2 million, 2.5 million individuals that were marching out of Egypt. That's a substantial group of people moving out, and it would have raised quite a cloud of dust, and it was quite a formidable task to get all these people moving, and but I'm sure they were all glad to get out of the land of Egypt. So let's go here to the next chart, and we'll see here. So let's go to Exodus chapter 12, verses 40 and 41. We'll make our way through here. We'll refer to the scriptures at times. Exodus 12, verse 40. It says, "Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. Now, God earlier had said it would be 400 years when they would come out of Egypt, but where do we get the 430? One possibility is that the 430 represents the 30. It's calculated from the time when Abraham crossed the River Jordan and came into the Promised Land. That would have been the beginning point of that count, and when that point was reached, then the 430-year point was reached. That's when they came out of Egypt, and they came out on a particular day that God had promised. So as you look here, so they left Egypt and they began their journey, and all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt, and it is a night of solemn observance. So they went out at night and began their journey. So they traveled followed a particular route. It tells us in Exodus chapter 13, verses 17 through 19, it tells us, "Then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near, for God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt." So if you leave Egypt and you're beginning a journey, and the first thing you run into are the warlike Philistines and inhabitants of the land of Canaan, it would have been discouraging, and God felt you guys don't need to, the first thing that you deal with is a battle. So God led them in a different direction. He took them in a different direction in order that he did what was best for them in his leadership. Verse 20. "So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness." So they right here on that first Sabbath, the blue line, they probably stayed at Succoth. That they went from Ramses to Succoth. So that was the first place they stayed, and it was probably a Sabbath. It was their first Sabbath in the wilderness. And then the next day was Sunday. Now, they didn't have any crops. They didn't have any way to make the wave sheaf offering at that point, but that Sunday was when the wave sheaf would have been offered in Israel. That's the day that Jesus Christ was accepted as the wave sheaf offering in 31 A.D. So this is looking forward to that. And that one there represents that it is the first day of the count to Pentecost. It's 50 days that you're going to count. This was the first day. So they kept the Sabbath, and then the next day was Sunday, and they kept that was the day when the wave sheaf was offered. And it was something that they had to begin to make that calculation so that they kept track of the time so that they would keep the Feast of Pentecost. Because God not only told them to keep the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, but they were to keep the Feast of Pentecost as well. So that's so then they went on, and it says that in verse 20, so they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness. So they moved on and they stayed at a place called Etham after Succoth. Etham was the second place that they stayed. And then it goes on to say, and the Lord went before them the day by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. So God, the one we know as Jesus Christ, was leading the people of Israel. And he was leading them to a particular point and a particular challenge in order to accomplish the purpose that he had for them. Now, so they travel two more days, and then they land here on the 21st, and this is getting ready for the crossing of the Red Sea. They come to Pi Hahiroth, and on the edge of the Red Sea. Chapter 14 of Exodus, verses 15 through 17. So the people are terrified that the Egyptians have come after them. So they're here, they're boxed in, they have no place to go. The Egyptians feel that they're going to be easy prey, and they're going to force them to go back into enslavement in Egypt. And so Moses tells them, "The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." And the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea." So then what's interesting is the Egyptians are bearing down upon them, but the one that we know as Jesus Christ stopped the Egyptians and kept them from overrunning the people of Israel. We pick this up in beginning in verse 19. Exodus chapter 14, verse 19. It says, "And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel," so he was leading them, had been leading them, "went before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them." So he went from in front of them to behind them. "And so it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that the one did not come near the other all that night." So on the Egyptian side, it's dark. It's dark. They can't move forward. And on the Israelite side, it's light. God is providing light to the people of Israel. Then verse 21, "Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided." So there was so God opened the way for Israel to go through the Red Sea. And go on to so we see that they were stuck here at Baal Zephon. A mountain range, and they were boxed in. They were the Egyptians were stopped. They couldn't go forward. They couldn't attack Israel. And God is shining the light on the Israelite side. Now, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? Well, we see that Israel was put into a difficult situation because it was God's purpose to open the way for them. And, you know, so as the sun is going down, the Egyptians cannot attack Israel. And they come to this point and they're going to go through the Red Sea. It says that the people of Israel are terrified, as I said, and the angel goes behind and protects them. And then they crossed, and interestingly, they crossed by night. So why did they need the light? It's because they were going to go through the Red Sea at night. So it didn't wait till the next day. They went through the Red Sea at night. And so this is the beginning of the last day of unleavened bread, the 21st of Abib. And during the nighttime portion of the 21st, the Israelites were all crossing through the Red Sea. They were illuminated by God. So God caused this strong east wind to come and to blow all night and to keep the waters back so that they could cross over. And God is there behind them. He's providing Israel light, darkness to the Egyptians. They're in the dark and they cannot move. They cannot attack the people of Israel. And Israel, the people of Israel are making their way across the Red Sea. So let's go to verse 23, Exodus chapter 14, verse 23. It says, and the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all the Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and horsemen. So they went into the Red Sea. Now it came to pass in the morning watch. So it's morning. The day is dawning. That the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. And he took off their chariot wheels so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. So they were pursuing Israel. It's just the dawning of the day. God has, they can see now what's going on. They see Israel is passing through the Red Sea, almost out. And they pursue them, going to chase them down. And so God says, no, that's not going to be something that I'm going to allow to happen. Verse 30 of Exodus 14 says, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. And we see them coming through the Red Sea. We see the Egyptians destroyed, and the sea went back over them. As you look at chapter 15, verse 22, it says that Pharaoh's destroyed. They're on the other side of the Red Sea. And it says in verse 22, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. So they went through the Red Sea. You can see that they've gone through the Red Sea here where the green line is. And then they go 3 days. They went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and they found no water. They found no water. And the day's journey would be the daylight portion of the 21st. They would progress toward their destination. They traveled on Thursday. Thursday would be the first black line to the right of the green one. And then on Friday is the last line. And it's one more way we can know the weekly cycle, how this weekly cycle went during that week. And what they did is they came to a place called Mara, which is all the way to the right, and it's a Sabbath day. So they come there on Friday, and they find there's no water to drink. It's Mara, the waters are bitter. And let's go to Exodus chapter 15, verse 23. Now when they came to Mara, they could not drink the waters of Mara, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of the place was called Mara, meaning bitter. So there was no water for them to drink. So there they are on the Sabbath day, and they have no water to drink. As it says, we've read Exodus chapter 15, verse 23. And now we're going to look at Numbers chapter 33, some here and try to understand, because that helps us to understand some of the timing of things and their and about their journey. Exodus chapter 33, verse 8. It says, they departed from the from before Haharath and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, went 3 days' journey in the wilderness of Etham and camped at Marah. So both the Numbers and Exodus point to the same location and the same timing. And so Numbers here gives us some indications of the different camps that they kept along their way to the Mount Sinai. And it begins with their gathering at Ramses in Numbers 33, verse 3. On the 15th day of the first month, they went from Ramses to Succoth. And then they camped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness in chapter Numbers 33, verse 6. And from Etham back to Pi Hahiroth near Migdol. And then from Pi Hahiroth they went through the Red Sea, 3 days' journey, and camped at Marah. So they are making their way to the land of to Mount Sinai, but they have some time ahead of them. Let's go to Exodus chapter 15 and look at verse 27. Exodus 15, verse 27. It says, then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palms, so they camped there by the waters. So that's another location they went to. So we have them camping at Marah, which begins the first Sabbath after the wave sheaf. So they camped at Marah, they camped at Elim. And then it says they moved from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. So they went from this location and camped by the Red Sea. So the first Sabbath is at Marah. And that's where they had the bitter waters. And then on the 14th day of their journey, their 7 days there, they come to their second place, they come to Elim, which is found that we've read about in Exodus 15, verse 27. And then 7 more days says, brings us to the 21st, and they camp by the Red Sea. Okay, so they're making their journey, and then, and unfortunately, I've not found a map that really details this. Most people don't believe they went through the Red Sea. And so it's hard to find a map that actually corroborates that and shows that in detail. And then on the then they've gone to a different month, and it's called they've gone out of the month Abib, and it's called Iyar. And they come to Sabbath number 4. Sabbath number 4. And let's go to Numbers chapter 33, verse 11. Let's go to there first, and then we'll. So they moved. They camped in the wilderness of Sin. It's 3 weeks since they've left Egypt. They camped by the Red Sea, and then Sabbath number 4. Let's go to Numbers 33 and look at verse 11. And there's a correlation between Numbers and Exodus. You can go back and forth between the two. Numbers basically gives you the place they stayed, whereas Exodus gives you more details about the particular place that they stayed. It gives you more of a narrative. Numbers 33, verse 11. It says here, and they moved from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. And in Exodus chapter 16, verse 1, it says, and they journeyed from Elim. And all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. So they landed at in the wilderness of Sin on the 15th day of the second month, which would be the 16th of Iyar, which is here for Sabbath number 4. And it's a month after they departed from the land of Egypt. They camp in the wilderness of Sin. So you can see you've got a chronology here that you can put together, the first 7 days out, then the 14 days out, and that's all calculated from the timing of the wave sheaf. So it's 14 days after the wave sheaf, 21 days after the wave sheaf, 28 days after the wave sheaf. So, we come to Exodus 16. and we see the common reaction of the people of Israel. Exodus chapter 16, as I said, it gives us more of a narrative of the things that they went through and how they reacted. Exodus 16, beginning in verse 2. It says, "Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, 'Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger.'" So they're 3.5 weeks out of Egypt. And basically the food that they've carried with them is running out or has run out. They don't have water. And, they really were limited in what they could carry along on the journey. And so they've run out of water. There's no water. They've run out of food. And the way they imagined it, it was so much better back in the land of Egypt, which isn't true, but it's how they saw it. And they cried and they groaned under the regimen, this was hard. It was a struggle and they saw no way out of it. And realistically, they didn't trust God to provide for them, even though He had provided for them at every turn. When the waters were bitter at Marah, God provided for them. And God's going to provide for them now. So let's look at Exodus 16, verse 4. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not.'" So God said, "I'm going to provide manna for them. I'm going to provide the food that you need to survive on. And it's also going to be something that teaches them. It's going to be a test for them whether they will walk in the law of God or not. Verse 5, "And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." And so we see here that God is going to provide for them, and it's going to be a test. And this is important for a couple of reasons. One is to realize that the beginning of the fall of the manna was on a Sunday. It had to be on a Sunday. So, because the sixth day would be on a Friday, and that's when they were to gather a double amount. So God's going to start sending it to them, and it's going to be on a Sunday morning. God's going to provide the manna for them on a Sunday morning. Let's go to Exodus 16, verse 6. "Then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, 'At evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for He hears your complaints about the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us?' And also Moses said, 'This shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat in the evening.'" When is He going to give them meat? And in the morning, bread to the full. So we've concluded that that's going to be in the morning on a Sunday. So when is He going to give them meat? "Bread to the full, for the Lord hears your complaints which you make against Him. And what are we? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Lord." So we have here the 28 days after the wave sheaf was given on the 15th day of the second month. And we have the gathering of manna here. And then we have the 28th again, on the 15th day of the second month. And that day there, you have the 28th, and then right next to it is the first day of manna, which is a Sunday. All right? It is a Sunday. And we'll move on to what unfolds here. God said He's going to give them meat. All right, and this is a portrayal of that, the quail coming into the camp that God brought to the camp in order that they could have meat. So He's going to give them meat, and then He's going to give them manna. So the question is, why did God send the quail in the evening? Why did God send it in the evening? Now, we're talking about the Sabbath day. And when it talks about the evening there, it's between the evenings. It's after sunset, but before dark. So after sunset, God is going to make the quail available to the people of Israel. The sun was down, but there was enough light for them to gather the quail that would come in and die. You know, it would have been inappropriate on the Sabbath day to kill the animals and take off the feathers and that kind of thing. So when the Sabbath is over, God says, I will cause this meat to come into the field and eat, and they would have an evening meal of meat. And in the morning, on the Sunday morning, then they're going to begin gathering the manna. So let's go to chapter 16, verse 9 of Exodus. It says, and Moses spoke to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your complaints. So they are to come near. He's heard their complaints. Now it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, saying, I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight, between sunset and dark, you shall eat meat. And in the morning, you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So God is trying to provide for them, to tell them, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide meat for you this evening after sunset, and I'm going to provide the bread that you need in the morning, on Sunday morning. So it was that the quails came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp. And so God provided for them both the quail for an evening meal of meat and then the manna in the morning. Now, so looking at this on the chart here, we have the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. It is a Sabbath day, and God tells them, I'm going to provide for you the quail. So he does that after sunset there on the 16th of Iyar. And then on the Sunday morning, they go out and begin gathering manna. And it began on that Sunday because God was testing them. And he said, when you go out to gather the manna, then gather what you need. Don't gather more than you need. And on the Friday, which is the 22nd of Iyar, then you are to gather twice as much. We find that in Exodus chapter 16, verses 22 and 23. It says, and so it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. Now an omer is about the size of a 3-gallon coffee can. So you buy a coffee can and it's about that size, an omer. It's a pretty good sized amount that you would have for your family. So he says that twice as much bread, two omers for each one. So get an omer each day, and then on Friday get two omers. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Then he said to them, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. So they went out and they gathered the manna, and they gathered up enough, an omer's worth, and on Friday they gathered twice as much, so they would have enough for the Sabbath day, and they would not have to go out and gather it. Now, in verse 22 of chapter 16, it says they went out and they gathered it. He tells them to bake what you will bake today, boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. Now, this is an interesting point that's made here about Friday and the gathering of the manna. What it tells us is that they could bake it and boil it or boil it on Friday. But God did not want them baking it or boiling it on the Sabbath. They were to take the time to prepare. And when God reintroduced the Sabbath, God made sure to mention the importance of the day of preparation. And it's a good example for all of us. We should prepare as much as we can on Friday before the Sabbath begins. Now, there may be some minor cooking and preparation that has to be done on the Sabbath, but God said we need to do as much as we can to prepare on Friday before the Sabbath begins, so that we can enjoy the Sabbath to the full in the way that God intended us to enjoy it. It's not a normal day of cooking and cleaning and working. So it's not the day that, we're spending the whole day in the kitchen preparing food. It's a day in which we focus upon God and we enjoy the things that we've taken the time to prepare ahead of time. So let's go to verse 24 of Exodus 16. It says, So they laid up until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it. So if you gathered more than you needed on a regular weekday, then you would find that it would begin to stink and there would be worms in it if you gathered too much. And you know, some people did. Some people said, hey, I'll get all I need. And God said, don't get more than you need. Then Moses said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there shall be none. But guess what happened? Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found none. And God said, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments? So God's trying to teach them about the Sabbath day and how to rightly and properly observe it. And they were still in learning mode here as the people of God. So we see that they gathered twice as much because tomorrow is the Sabbath. We see the Sabbath day here. Today is the Sabbath unto the Lord. And that pattern continues to exist. And so we see the 23rd of Iyar is when they really came to know of the Sabbath which God had given to them. And this is Sabbath number 5 that they're keeping here, 35 days out from the time that they left the land. So then we find them on the move again. And let's go to Exodus 17, verse 1. It says, then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin according to the commandments of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So again, they come to Rephidim, there is no water. And let's go back to Numbers chapter 33. Because it fills in a little bit of information which we don't pick up in the book of Exodus. Numbers 33, verse 11, says, they moved from the Red Sea, and they camped in the wilderness of Sin. And then it says, after they left there, they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophkah. So that's not mentioned in the book of Exodus. They camped at Dophkah and camped at Alush. So they moved from Alush and camped at Rephidim. So there were two other places that they stopped along the way after they left the location where God was teaching them about the Sabbath, 35 days out. So they moved from the wilderness of Sin here on a Sunday, and then they traveled 5 days, and they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophkah, and departed from Dophkah and camped at Alush. And then they come to Rephidim on the Sabbath day. They come to Rephidim on the Sabbath day, and they found no water to drink. And basically, it was a 5-day journey. They journeyed from the wilderness of Sin, and they camped at Dophkah and Alush during this 5-day period. And when they come to Rephidim on Friday, right before the Sabbath, so they come there in the Sabbath, they're 42 days out. They're almost to Mount Sinai and to the day of Pentecost. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17 tells us that they camped at Rephidim and there was no water. Let's begin in verse 2. Therefore, the people contended with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. So God had provided for them all along the way, the quail, the daily. He provided the food sustenance that they needed. He was going to let them die there in the wilderness. He wasn't going to provide water for them. But they began to complain. So Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, why is it you have brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock? So they cried out, and unfortunately, you know, they did not have faith that God would provide for them. And God said in verse 5, "And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock and the water will come out of it, and the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders. So he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Was God among them or not? Wasn't he the one leading them by the cloud during the day and the fire by night? Wasn't he illuminating their camp every night? And yet they did not, even though he was there, they didn't recognize what God had done and was doing and that God would provide for them. God was taking them to the land of promise. They could be assured of that. So they're complaining, and as you look at Moses goes out and he taps the rock. He told him to tap the rock here. Now, in another place, he said, "Speak to the rock." But in this particular location, he tells him to tap the rock. Now, Israel faced another challenge here in the wilderness. They were faced by a challenge from Amalek. The people of Amalek attacked Israel, and they had to battle them. What Amalek had been doing was, they were following the people of Israel. And if there was somebody straggling behind, one of the cattle straggled behind, one of the herd or the flock straggled behind, or people straggled behind, then they attacked them. And they were killing off the weak and the people that couldn't keep up. And eventually, they attacked Israel, confronted them full force. So Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. That's one of the challenges they faced there. And this was an interesting situation here in chapter 17, verse 8. It says, "Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose us some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand.' So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy." You know, if you're trying to hold a rod up, you're going to get tired of that. And so he would have to rest and he would lower his arms. And whenever he did so, then Amalek would prevail. And as he would raise his arms back up, then Israel would prevail. So Aaron and Hur supported his hands on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek, his people, with the edge of the sword. So they defeated Amalek there at Rephidim. They had defeated them there at Rephidim. The battle was very likely on a Thursday, possibly a Friday. We don't know exactly what day of the week it was, but we do know that it was this particular week that we've looked at there as they've come up to Rephidim. It would be before the Sabbath because they kept the Sabbath day in Rephidim. And God also told them that in the future, Amalek was to be punished. They were not to forget how Amalek took advantage of the weak and the poor and the oppressed in order to kill them off and then attacked Israel. And God said, don't forget that. And he gave Saul the responsibility of dealing with Amalek, which he unfortunately did not do. So they fought with Amalek there. And so they come up to the land of to Rephidim, and they're getting very near Mount Sinai. On Friday, in all probability, Jethro came and visited with Moses. That would have been found in Exodus chapter 18. Speaks of Jethro. That's where Jethro came and visited and noted that Moses was trying to do all the work himself and was unable to keep up with it all. And he said, you know, you need to do some delegation in order that you can keep up with everything. And Moses followed his advice. So Israel departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. That's what it tells us in Numbers 33, verse 15. And in Exodus chapter 19, verse 1, it says, "In the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai." So after this journey, out of Egypt, they come to the wilderness of Sinai. So they're 49 days after, this is the 49th day, the seventh Sabbath. They've been counting and they come to Mount Sinai. And what's interesting here is you look at 7:5 here, it talks about something that's quite interesting as you look at Exodus chapter 19, verse 1. It says, in the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt on the same day. So the question is, what was the same day? Well, the most likely conclusion is, that makes the most sense, is they came out of Egypt on a Thursday, and here they are, they've arrived at Mount Sinai on the same day, which would have been a Thursday. 7:5, the Thursday, then you have Friday, then you have the seventh Sabbath. So they ended up leaving Rephidim and going to the wilderness of Sinai. And then when they get to Sinai, God asked them a particular question. And we find this in Exodus 19, verse 3. It says, and so God was there at Mount Sinai waiting for their arrival. In verse 3 it says, and Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now that's always interesting to me because it says he bore them on eagle's wings, but they walked every step of the way. So walking on eagle's wings may not necessarily mean we're going to be flying any place. It may be we may be hoofing it. So Israel hoofed it, and we may be doing the same thing. We'll know when it happens. But anyway, Israel comes up, and God said, make note of what I've done. And in a sense, God was with them and protected them and provided for them in a way that was impossible. They couldn't have made it across the desert into the wilderness without God's help. Verse 5, now therefore, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And so God is, in verse 6, he says, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So God says these things, and God's on the mountain. He sent Moses up to talk to them. And he says a very short 4-verse commitment. Is Israel willing to make this commitment? And so, are they going to do it? Now we come to Feast of Pentecost here, 49 days out. Verses 7 through 9. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all the words which the Lord commanded them. So this is before God gives the Ten Commandments. Will they? So Moses came and called the elders, and all the people answered together, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. So Moses is going back and forth between God and the people. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. So they're making this commitment to God. So Moses told the words, and the people said that they would do whatever God asked them to do. Verse 10. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. And let them be ready for the third day, for on the third day the Lord will come down from Mount Sinai in the sight of all his people. So the first day would have been Friday when they arrived here at Mount Sinai. The second day would have been Saturday, the Sabbath, which we see here, 49. And then the third day would have been Sunday, the 50th day, the Feast of Pentecost. The 50th day since the wave sheaf offering. It would have been 7-7, which would have been the 49th day. And then you have the Feast of Pentecost that was kept there at Mount Sinai. And he tells him in verses 12 and 13, do not go up to the mountain. And there's to set a bound there. They're not to go up on the mountain because that's where God is at. So they probably set up a row of stones around the base of Mount Sinai on the western side so the people would not cross that boundary, a boundary that they simply were not to cross. Chapter 19, verse 14. So Moses went down from the mountain and to the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, be ready for the third day. Do not come near your wives. The question is, you mean you couldn't have sex at this particular point? Why did God say no sex here before I give you my commandments? Well, the reason was because a lot of times in religious things in that time, sex was very much a part of it. And God did not want to in any way indicate that sex would be a part of what's going to be taking place here. Sex is appropriate in marriage, but it was not part of the ceremony. Because as you look at the rituals of the Canaanites and the people all around them, that was a very common occurrence. So he tells them to be ready for the third day. Be ready for the third day. Now, so they're to be ready the third day, and then the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. So God was going to make his presence known here at Mount Sinai. This is a depiction of what it may have been like. Exodus 19, beginning in verse 16. Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain, that the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. So all the people were gathered at the foot of Mount Sinai, and there was a long blast of the trumpet. And it's similar to the trumpet that will sound when Jesus Christ returns. People are going to know that Jesus Christ is returning and that something dramatic is unfolding when Christ returns. And Christ was here in this particular situation with the people of Israel. When Christ returns and circles the earth, the sound of the trumpet will be heard by everyone. They will have heard all of the trumpets, but they'll hear this one, which will signal the coming of Christ. And with all of this that's taking place here, the thundering, the lightning, the trumpet, the people were afraid. People were afraid. And we see this spoken of in verse 21. It says here, and the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish. And let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. Now, there was no organized priesthood at this particular time. It's thought that these priests that are spoken of would have been the tribe of Levi. And even though God had not designated them for that position at that time, but they were related to Moses and Aaron and may have served in that way to keep the people back. But Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you warned us, saying, set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. Then the Lord said to him, away, get down and then come up. You and Aaron with you, but do not let the priest and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So God would destroy them if they crossed that bound. So, verse 23, so he sends them down, and so Moses went down to the people and spoke to them. So Moses and Aaron are fairly close to the people, although they're part of the way up the mountain. And then God begins to get, and God gives the Ten Commandments, as we're told in Exodus chapter 20. So he gives all the Ten Commandments. He spoke them to them. And then let's go down to Exodus chapter 20, verse 18. Now all the people witnessed the thunderings and the lightnings, the flashes, the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, you speak with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us lest we die. So they were afraid. They didn't want God to speak directly to them as he had in giving them the Ten Commandments. So he said, we don't want God to speak to us. And this is a portrayal of God speaking to them there at Mount Sinai. And so the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. So Moses went before God. Then in verse 22 it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make anything to be with me.'" So you're not to make any graven images or any image of me or to add anything like that to me. There is to be no idolatry that is to take place here. Don't add any gods to me. So if he says in verse 23, "You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or whatever." Verse 24, "An altar of earth you shall make for me. You shall sacrifice on it burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. In every place where I record my name, I will come to you and I will bless you. And if you make an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. For if you use your tool on it, you have profaned it. Nor shall you go up by steps." And he gives them some things here about the altar. So they're to set up an altar, and it is to be the meeting place between God and the people of Israel, and Moses is to be the mediator. He's the one that stands between them and God, and that's the way they wanted it. They wanted Moses to relay God's message to them. They didn't want to hear God's voice speaking directly to them. Now he said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said, we will do. All the words which we have said, we will do." So Moses was to bring 73 other people with him to go up the mountain. Not all of them were to go near God. Moses alone was. And they said, "All the words that we've said that we will do." And Moses went up to God, and then he brought back what we find in Exodus chapter 20 through 23. And this was the day they gave their word to obey all God had said to them. And chapter 24, verse 4, it says, "And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord and rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel." So at the end of the day of Pentecost, we have Moses writing as a scribe all the words of the Lord, because the people of Israel had agreed to the covenant that they were going to keep with God. So Moses rose early in the morning and he took the book of the covenant and he read. And Moses went up in the mountain, and Moses wrote all the words down, and then sacrifices were made, and they entered into that covenant at Mount Sinai. Now, there's a little more that we find out about this in the book of Deuteronomy. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5. There's a little more to the story here that we find in chapter 5. Now, this is 40 years down the road, basically, from this point. And they're on the brink of entering into the land of promise. Moses can't go in, but Moses writes down what he remembered and what God inspired. It's called the second giving of the law. And let's go down to Deuteronomy 5, verse 22. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 22. So this is again the giving of the Ten Commandments in verse 22. "These words the Lord spoke to all your assembly in the mountain from the midst of the fire, the cloud, and the thick darkness with a loud voice, and he added no more. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone and gave them to me." So all Israel heard from God were the Ten Commandments, which summarizes all the statutes and the judgments that were later given. Verse 23, "So it was when you heard the voice from the midst of the darkness while the mountain was burning with fire that you came near to me, all the heads of your tribes and your elders, and you said, 'Surely the Lord our God has shown us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice from the midst of the fire. We have seen this day that God speaks with man, yet he still lives. Now therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, then we shall die.'" That wasn't true. That was something they imagined. For who is there of all flesh who has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of the fire as we have and lived? So, yes, you know, you can't go in God's presence and live and see Him directly, but God was working with them, and God would have spoken to them, and He would have spoken directly to them. But they weren't willing to do that. So verse 27, they told Moses, "You go near and hear all that the Lord our God may say, and tell us all that the Lord our God says to you, and we will hear and do it." So they commissioned Moses to be their mediator. We don't want to hear God ourselves. And then verse 28, "Then the Lord heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, 'I have heard the voice of the words of this people which they have spoken to you. They are right in all that they have spoken. Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever.'" Verse 29 gives us God's own feelings about the day of Pentecost. Because it was on the day of Pentecost in 31 AD that God... See, they didn't have the heart. The people of Israel did not have the heart. He said, "Oh, that they had such a heart." They didn't have it, as you can see by their conduct from this point forward. But it was on the day of Pentecost in 31 AD that God gave the Holy Spirit a little of that Shekinah glory. That's where the little bit of fire, that clove of fire, was above their heads. It's a little bit of the glory of God that was poured out on each one of those people at that time. The Shekinah glory, that fire that the people of Israel were afraid of. Now a small part of that was placed on the head of each of those assembled in 31 AD on Pentecost, that they might have a heart that would fear God always and keep His commandments. You see, God's Spirit is crucial to that. That Spirit of God is available to us today. In fact, it lives in us for the purpose brought out in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 29. God's heart and desire has not changed. The Bible tells us Jesus Christ changes not. Same God, same purpose. And He's working that purpose out in us. God's feelings about the day of Pentecost is that His people would have a heart in them to fear and obey, that it might be well with them, not only them, but their children and family forever. And that's what God wanted to accomplish with them. And forever doesn't mean until you die. It means forever. We're talking about eternal life. Chapter 5, verse 31, "But as for you, stand here by me, and I will speak to you all the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments, which you shall teach them, that they may observe them in the land which I am giving them to possess. Therefore you shall be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess." So as you think about it, did God give the law at Sinai on Pentecost? Did He do that? Did He give the law on the day of Pentecost? I think He did. Because you see, you can't understand the law unless you have God's Spirit, and your heart is circumcised, and God can work in and through you. God's Spirit is crucial to understanding the law and keeping the law. So let's keep these verses in mind as we keep the day of Pentecost.